is the Next Trip Podcast with aviation insiders Doug and Drew. Together, with more than 40 years of industry experience, they are creating a network for other av geeks and travel enthusiasts to obsess about all things aviation. All thoughts and opinions are their own.
Good day and welcome to Boarding Pass 148, operating on September 26, 2022. This is Doug, an airline pilot, and I'm here with my buddy Drew, an airline ops manager and private pilot trainee. We're here to discuss aviation topics from an industry insider's perspective. Drew, we have a fun-filled episode this week, and I have a lot of questions about your recent travels. But before we talk about your, in quotes, logistics, you were in LA last weekend. Sorry I couldn't be there for the second year in a row. Tell the listeners why you were there and what it was all about.
Well, Doug, it was a bittersweet visit. I wasn't going to make a big fuss about it because you weren't going. But of course, I was there and everyone's asking where Doug is. It's like, Doug can't come. Maybe in 20 years when he has enough seniority, he can pick weekend days off. But until then, you know, you got me. I returned. I just went to Dorkfest. This is an annual AvGeek gathering at LAX. It's started by Brett Snyder of Cranky Flyer. Our friends over at the Non-Rev Lounge podcast had him over on their show a couple weeks ago. So go check it out to hear him talk about the history of the event. As he says, it's an informal gathering of AV geeks on a random Saturday in September. And who doesn't love an In-N-Out burger and low-flying planes? And dude, that is all it is.
I love how it has turned into this huge thing that is in the Wall Street Journal and all kinds of different publications. And he's like, guys, it's literally 2 hours at a burger joint on a random day in September, just hanging out. Like, he doesn't want it to be this huge thing.
Right. But now there's a raffle and there's other people. NYC Aviation has their spot LAX. So that's branched out. Basically also Tyler Fest. Tyler from Non-Rev Lounge sent out an agenda and all kinds of people were following it, whether or not they even listened. I just sent it to people. It's like, this is what we're doing, according to Tyler. But there was some, there's a little gossip, Doug. There's a little murmuring because I didn't want it to be a Next Trip event, but we're trying out these new t-shirts. And for the listeners, once we perfect a t-shirt, we'll see if you guys want one of them. But t-shirts, I went with Ryan from Fargo, which we'll talk about, slapped on a t-shirt on him and his friend Tanner that came with us. So it was like the wear test. So it seemed like a whole Next Trip event now, which was what I wanted to avoid. So there were murmurings. You know, we have our troublemaker. Francis is public enemy number one of the show because he's so critical of us. And right behind him is Henry, which you've also heard about him. He's the one who came to me and said, hey, you know, they're talking now. I'm wondering, were they really or is it just him? That all these people were doing like little side events. And Next Trip didn't contribute anything. And I'm like, dude, I'm just here as a person.
At first, I was a little bit upset about that because I feel like all of these side events are piggybacking on what Brett set up. And this is Brett's event. And I didn't want to steal it.
Yeah.
But the more I think about it, if people know the Next Trip podcast and they're murmuring that we didn't do anything, I'm no longer angry that they were murmuring that we didn't do anything. I'm happy that people know who we are at these events. Exactly.
So we have a whole year to think about it and a whole year for you to figure out how you're going to get the time off. Non-Rev Lounge did pizzas on the rooftop at the H Hotel, is my understanding. Now, I didn't want to participate because I didn't contribute anything. So I knew about these things and I hung out, but I didn't like go have a free slice of pizza. Or NYC Aviation, I'm not sure what they did, but they were kind of the organizer of a lot of these things. They did a raffle. So NYC Aviation, thank you. I want a little bag of LAX stuff like socks and a little paperweight. It was awesome. So thank you, NYC Aviation. Jet Tip, Eric from Jet Tip did donuts the next morning, apparently. I thought we could do taco trivia. You know, we'll have an hour at the H Hotel rooftop, and we'll do taco trivia and ask people like what airlines flew the L-1011 TriStar in 1985, you know, or some dumb stuff like that, and give out our next new t-shirts.
New t-shirts. They look great. They look really comfortable.
What I want to say about the event, you know, we talk about people over planes, and I can regale you. This whole show can be about all the planes that I saw, and you know, all the liveries and stuff. But now I just want to give a shout out to all the people I met up with there. So we'll start off with Ryan. I flew there with Ryan. His handle is Planes and Planes, PlanesAndPlanes. Go check out his pictures on Instagram or Twitter. And then Ian, who was on the show last week, he met us there because he's in LA. Aaron, who's a listener and contributor. Nice meeting up with you, Aaron. DJ, who goes by DJ Spotter on Instagram. He's in Raleigh, Durham. He's a big spotter. And then the whole crew from Non-Rev Lounge, Tyler, Lara, Monique, and then their friend Brittany. She's great. I don't know if you had ever had time to talk to her.
I've never talked with her, but I love the episodes that she's been on.
Yeah, so much energy. And she's finished. She has soloed. So she's getting her private pilot's license. So she gave me a lot of good advice. Steve Tao, who we know, he's a mileage runner on Twitter. Ethan Clapper from The Points Guy. Really nice guy. We were talking about the aviation industry, and we talked a lot about the food on the planes, and we agreed. So all the airlines listening in, all the critics and Next Trip Podcast want you to slightly improve the food. So there's your $1 million consultation for free. Who else? Just real quick, Isaac, who does Jet City Star, who was on the show. He was there. Charlie, also from Seattle, met some two new people. Ben, who now works for our airline, I believe in finance. He does a blog called Fly Together.
Okay.
Fly Further. So Ben, it was nice meeting you. Met Jonathan, who is a mechanic at one of our competing airlines that we love based in Atlanta. Really nice guy. And surprise, Doug, we all have the same problems. It's just a different logo on the tail, and the problems are pretty much the same.
Yeah.
The problems and the stuff we love about the industry, pretty much the same. Ian and I took him out for a drink, got a lot of good information, which I can't share on the podcast. Kyle, there's an app called Clubhouse. And within Clubhouse, he does aviation enthusiasts, very similar to what we do, getting people together, a community of aviation people. And I think that's all. If I miss you, I am so sorry. I know I met a lot of people that I didn't know listen to our podcast, and this always happens. And it's great. It was great to see you. Keep giving us input and advice. We love it.
That's awesome. I kept looking at the pictures that you were sending throughout the day and just thinking about it. I looked at the time. I was like, oh, it's 11 o'clock or almost 11. I was looking because that's when I get my schedule for the next day. But I was like, oh, man, they're walking over to the In-N-Out right now because the event started at 11. And like you said, hopefully I will find a way to be there next year. I won't say openly how I will be there next year.
We can't guarantee,
but I will find a way. Okay, Drew, now for the fun part. you're rooting. Yeah, I thought that your rooting there was crazy and off the wall. Your rooting home was even more ridiculous.
I know, right?
Let's start with the way there. How did you get there? What did you do on that Friday?
Let's talk about getting there. So I wanted to pick up Ryan and his buddy Tanner in Fargo, because a lot of the fun is traveling with other Av geeks. You know, that's part of the fun. I could have gone nonstop to LA, but that's not much to talk about. So, and I wanted to see Fargo. We did an episode with Ryan called Flyover Ryan about the flyover states. So I really wanted to go there. So I went from Dulles to Chicago and then Chicago to Fargo on a CRJ 200, which Doug dubs the Satan's Chariot. And I was like groveling to get on the Satan's Chariot because there was a weight restriction to Fargo. All these flights to Fargo are full, and I'll talk about that in a second. Got to Fargo, got a tour of the airline's cargo facility in Fargo where Ryan works.
That's awesome.
You know, it is so nice to be an Av geek in an airport which is quiet and peaceful, and you see a few planes and the runways and the hangars. It was quite an experience. I got to learn what, you know, we talk about LD3s, you know what that is. Mm-hmm. I got to learn a whole bunch of other containers, which I'm not going to regale you about because we're going to lose a lot of people. But to me, it was really exciting. Like the containers for these cargo planes, they fit on top and bottom. So at the bottom, on a wide body, they have two LD3s side by side, which is a regular wide body bag can. On top, they have one that's the width of the passenger cabin. Ryan's going to kill me because I should have written these down. It was an AAY or an ADD. I cannot remember. But a whole host of other cans. We walked around. We saw a Cessna 208, which is a single. Do you know what that is?
Yeah, caravan.
Yeah, it was a tiny plane, single engine, and it carries cargo to these small cities. And then Tanner and Ryan took me around Fargo. Here's your Next Trip Fargo tourist visitor guide. So if you're only there for like 5 hours like we were, you go to JL Beers and have a great burger, but stay for the chips. They make their own potato chips, and it's potato that's cut really thin, and they put it in the deep fryer. It was great. I couldn't stop eating it. And then after that, walk over to Vinyl Taco for margaritas, Vinyl Records. They're playing real Vinyl Records. and then walk over to Silver Lining Ice Cream. So that was our day in Fargo. Getting to Fargo was crazy because all the flights were full. Leaving Fargo was even worse. I had to buy a revenue ticket on Frontier. Bought a revenue ticket because our airline doesn't have an agreement with Frontier. Not that I would have gotten on anyway. So the two guys, Ryan and Tanner, just barely got on. Just so everyone knows, like when you fly with Doug or me for the first time, there's beginner's luck. Because when I flew with you for the first time, we got business class seats together on a 787.
Granted, it was literally the weekend that COVID was wrecking the industry and everyone got on that airplane.
Okay, but we still got business class transcon. Yeah. What happened the second time I flew with you?
Myrtle Beach.
That's the only place we could get to. And we went in there for the great floods of Myrtle Beach, which we didn't know as we were flying there. First time I flew with Nate, he got on, everything was fine. The next time we're stuck in Houston overnight with a thunderstorm. So I get on with these two guys. We get to, the flight's late. We're connecting in Denver to Los Angeles, connecting to Southwest, which we're all.
Yeah, explain that. You're not connecting on Frontier.
Not connecting on Frontier. We're landing and Frontier was nice. Oh, let me talk about Frontier. Mm-hmm. Very basic, Doug. You get what you paid for. I don't have anything bad to say. I wasn't expecting a lot and I didn't get a lot. You get a very thin seat, a very tiny tray table, no drinks unless you pay for it. The crew is fine.
It seemed like a very boring cabin, like white walls, white everything. It was kind of blah. Yeah.
It's disappointing because it was a brand new plane. It was an A320neo. You know, you think all the options and niceties you could have on that. But once again, got me from point A to point B. And thank you, Frontier, because it was a low price. Get to Denver, we're late and we only have half an hour. We get there at 10 p.m. and our connecting flight on Southwest was at 10:30. And they made an announcement, hey, if there's anyone connecting to their flight to Salt Lake City, you know, let them off first. We're connecting to Southwest, but we didn't get off first. So thanks for that, Frontier. We made it. Southwest was wide open. There were 100 seats open on a 737-700. We each had our own row. And I got to say, this was an old 737-700. A very senior crew, old seats, not even like updated seats for Southwest. It was a great flight. I would say it was an excellent flight. The seats were comfy. The crew was friendly, free snacks. I hadn't flown Southwest for like 20 years.
Yeah.
It was great. It was on time. So that was my trip to LAX. Back to Fargo. So I'm like, what is going on in Fargo that there's so many people trying to get to this city of 130,000 people? The guys couldn't tell me. I mean, they loved living there. I mean, maybe that's one reason, right? People love living in the small town. So I did some research. The University of North Dakota has a big campus there. But did you know that Fargo has the second, after Seattle, they have the second largest Microsoft campus?
Really?
It's in Fargo.
It's in Fargo. Interesting. Right.
And listen to this. When you think of cities that are growing, that are very popular and growing, what are some cities that come to mind?
Nashville, Austin.
Yep.
Not Nashville. Fargo. I'm guessing you're going to tell me Fargo.
Yeah. Well, Nashville, Austin, Boise, Denver. No, forget about all those. Fargo is growing faster than all of those.
Wow.
Home values or land values rose 68% in those cities about. Fargo, 74%.
Hmm.
So if you want to get to Fargo and get a house for a reasonable price, get there now. And it was charming. And they were like, you really want to spend time with us in Fargo? I absolutely want to spend time with you in Fargo. It was so much fun.
Getting home then. This is like, that was a great story. That was lots of fun. Let's talk about you getting home.
All right. We got home in the most AvGeek way possible. So this was Tanner's idea. Because he wanted to fly around. And my suggestion was, let's just fly through the country and just club hop. We don't have any hurry to get home. Tanner came up with, well, why don't we fly to Maui? 60 seats open. It went out with 40. But we flew Hawaiian Airlines to Maui. Got to Maui, spent like 6 hours there. And then back Maui to Denver. They went to Fargo. And then I went to Washington. Dude, it was so much fun.
Spent an afternoon in Maui and then put yourself through the pain on the red eye just for that fun 6 hours in Maui.
Yeah. And I hadn't been to Maui in like 25 or 30 years. For Tanner, this was amazing. He had never been on a wide body and we flew an A330-200.
Awesome.
And he had never been to Hawaii.
Wow.
We got the full, we got all of Hawaii. We got there, got an Uber, really nice guy. So we gave him a bigger
Back it up. The flight, you said that you got some sort of a rum drink or a rum cake or something? Like, what was the service like?
Yeah, I almost want to have Ryan on maybe on the next episode. We can go in detail on this, but it was very nice. It was almost like, I hate to say, it was almost like we were on a very exotic carrier for us because it's Hawaiian and their uniforms are nice. They have flowers. The seats have little waves on them. They have Hawaiian music playing as we board. And they served a little Hawaiian hot pocket, whatever that was. It was delicious. I was glad to get a meal on that flight. I didn't know they served anything. But they serve rum punch, complimentary.
Rum punch, that's it. Yep.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, okay, it's probably just like some guava juice. It's like, dude, no, this has rum in it. Real rum.
Yeah.
The service was excellent. I went into the back. The two guys were sleeping. I'm like, come on, we got to get the most of this. So, of course, you know me, I'm in the back alley talking to the flight attendants. These flight attendants are based in L.A., they're doing a turn. So they're flying for like 5.5 hours and coming right back to LA.
That I've had that on some of my Hawaii flights where the flight attendants are turning, where I fly to Honolulu and lay over and they turn around and come back.
You explained this to me. So landing in Maui was very windy.
Mm-hmm.
And we landed and my goodness. So A330-200, these pilots, they set that thing down so softly that I thought we were still flying. And, you know, you see the speed brakes come up. It's like, oh my God, we're on the ground. And it was, the nose was up for the longest time. And it seemed like it was going so slow. The nose comes down and the brakes go on. And he or she stops in no time.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when people used to clap when it was a good landing. This was back in the 80s. It was kind of a fad. People clapped for that landing. And you were telling me that the runway is very short. Have you landed there?
I have, yeah. Both on the Guppy and the Triple. It's less than 7,000 feet. I think it's 6,800, 6,900 feet, maybe 67. I can't remember off the top of my head, which is a pretty short runway. And it's between two mountains, two big mountains, and it's like a wind tunnel. The winds there are just howling all the time. So you have these super strong winds that you're dealing with, lots of turbulence going in there. You're on a very big, especially on the Triple, you're on a very big airplane, and you have a relatively short runway that you have to stop on. I'll tell you, though, it was less harrowing in the Triple than it was on the 7.3 because the braking on the Triple,
mm-hmm.
we have 12 gear with brakes, and they're carbon brakes. The mm-hmm. Triple will stop on a dime if I needed to. The 7.3, on the other hand, we're honking on the brakes, and we're like, I hope we stop before the end of the runway. I hope we stop. It's a lot more harrowing in the 7.3 than it was on the Triple.
Yeah, I will say the stop or the slowdown was very abrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent landing, but you could tell the runway short and they're trying to slow it down quickly. Yeah. But then real quick, there's several beaches in Maui. Kihei Beach is where all the resorts were.
That's where we stay.
The Uber driver, we asked him for advice. He said, no, you can go there or I can take you to Paya Beach, which is closer to the airport. It was exactly what we needed. It was like Santa Cruz. It was like a little beach town.
Yeah.
So we had delicious mahi-mahi. We walked on the beach. We saw the sea turtles. Went to a sports bar. Like, we had a whole Maui experience. It is so American, Maui, that you don't know who's a local and who's not. There's people that look like me. There's people that look like you. I don't know who's Hawaiian. They're all Hawaiian.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like it was just very normal, you know, and it was nice to be with the locals. Everyone's so friendly.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely, I mean, if you're an on-rev, you have some time on your hands, connect. When you're going from LA to Denver, connect through Maui. That's all I got. I mean, we'll have Ryan on the show and he can, I mean, these guys were just having a ball. So I kind of want him on because it was more new to both of them than me, especially Tanner.
That's awesome. Well, our first topic this week isn't directly aviation related. It's been a busy few weeks for both of us, for our jobs and for travel, as well as some pretty full episodes. We'd be remiss if we didn't apologize to our listeners in the UK for not mentioning the biggest news in many years, the passing of Queen Elizabeth II. Her funeral was held last week after laying in state for nearly a week following her death.
Yeah, Doug, our condolences to all of our friends in the UK. But you mentioned this topic isn't aviation related. I bet I can find something tangential to aviation, aside from the story about Heathrow arrivals and departures being canceled during the hours of the funeral. We've talked extensively this summer, Doug, about queues at airports around Europe, especially at Heathrow. Well, how about this one for you? Millions of people turned out to pay their respects in Westminster Hall, creating what the locals dubbed quite simply the queue. <That's>, more than capital letters.
Two capital letters. That's so British that they called it that.
Yeah, it's a thing.
It was trending on Twitter, I guess, too. The queue at one point stretched more than 5 miles. People waited in line for hours. Some reports say upwards of 24 hours for some people. One person likened it to waiting in line at Stansted Airport for your holiday. I'm not sure why he picked on Stansted instead of any other London airport, but he said it's like...
It just seems that's the whipping boy of British airports.
It's Stansted, yeah. A reporter from the Washington Post spoke to people in the queue from all over the world, including Sri Lanka, Wales, Ghana, India, Bangladesh, Ireland, Germany, Sierra Leone, the US, Spain, Italy, Hong Kong, China, and Australia, plus I'm sure many more. The BBC even report, this is great. The BBC even reportedly started giving frequent weather forecasts for the queue while covering other locations around the region. Someone on social media poignantly said, "I don't particularly care either way about the Queen, but the queue is a triumph of Britishness."
This is great. You know, we all love the British. We love their culture. We love emulating it. And we're both born in colonies where we hated the British, right? Years and years ago, but that's all forgotten. And we love the British.
Yeah.
You know, I was born in Sri Lanka. You were born here. I live here. But no, it's great. So this whole thing, everything in Britain has to be proper, even standing in line. They can create a process for that. I was looking into this, Doug.
Did you read that article that I put in there from the Washington Post about people cutting in line and getting kicked out? And
yeah, no, you can't. I mean, that's not following, you know, British SOP or British etiquette. So in 2010, I don't know if this went through. I don't think it did. The ministers were trying to make queuing, learning how to queue, part of the citizenship test. And, you know, I think that we should make learning how to queue part of an airline test to be a frequent flyer, because there's no one follows, well, hardly anyone follows the rules, and there's certain etiquette for airline queuing. So I think that's something that maybe we should talk about on the next.
Here's the aviation tangent. We said that it was tangential. Here is that tangent. What were some of the screenshots that you just sent me right before we came on?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you said this. Everything is related to aviation. I talked about how organized the boarding process has been on my flights recently. Mm-hmm. And why is that?
Because it's the laptop crowd, not the flip-flop crowd.
It's a laptop. It's not the flip-flop. It's a laptop crowd. Everyone's organized. I don't think our company should direct people on exactly what to do, but this helps everyone out. This helps the flight leave earlier, which helps everyone, right? If we do it in an organized fashion. So I just happen to notice I'm sitting on our airline in an aisle seat, and someone else has the channel that has the commercials and the information from our airline. And I see flashing on the screen, how to board.
How to line up.
How to stow your luggage. But it was so cool because it has the boarding groups. And then it says, if you're not in these boarding groups, feel free to kick back and relax. You know, they make it positive. Kick back and relax. Why are you standing in line? You're not gonna gain any time if it's not your boarding
group. Here's my problem with this, though. You are watching how to queue on board once you've already boarded and once you've already broken all those rules that the airline is trying to tell you to follow.
I know. And, you know, it just seemed like a video we also cycled through on the overhead screens.
Yeah.
Someone may have seen it before boarding. Well, if they didn't catch it, now we're going to ingrain you on the airplane. But I think it's good. It makes it more organized. And I'm part of that. I'm usually, when I'm flying, I'm usually group three, which is the third group. And I wait. I don't hog the line. I don't even stay close to the line. And I only start moving when they call that. And it seems like people are getting acclimated to that more and more, which is great. And, you know, you and I hate queues. I mean, we'll spend $150 every 5 years to get, what is it, the
global
TSA.
Entry. Yeah, global. And pre-check.
Yeah, I hate queuing. If there's a queue, I'd rather just walk away, wait till the queue has gone, and then I will board without, you know, people all around me. Same thing with restaurants or movie theaters. If there's a queue, I'll go someplace else.
You're not very British.
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
This is also regarding queuing. Do you ever do a chat and cut?
Where you find someone and you start talking to them? And not, I have done that, not with random strangers, but if I see a friend or someone that I know, I'll walk up and just start chatting. And it just becomes normal. And then the people around are like, oh, well, I guess he was.
Oh, you're a chat and cutter.
He was supposed to be here.
That's a chat and cut. That is not allowed. And everyone does it. So I did a chat and cut in Maui coming back home. The two guys, they get in the queue, and I hate the queue. So I'm like, I'll just join it later. So I was talking to someone, which I'll come back to. And then it's time to get in line, but my friends are over there. I walk over there and I did a chat and cut, so I'm sorry. And I looked to make sure I wasn't getting scowls by the people, and everyone's fine. Everyone's chatting. They're in Hawaii, so they're happy. But yeah, that's a chat and cut. Don't do it.
Was this at the airport?
This was boarding the flight from Maui to Denver.
Okay. You said everyone's happy. Why are they? They're going home. Why were they happy?
Everyone seemed happy. It seemed like people had a relaxing
that could time be. In Maui. Yeah, it was their recharge.
A few rum punches fixes everything. You know? So everyone was fine. I really knew these guys. I mean, the stereotypical chat and cut, you see someone you vaguely know and you go chat just for the purpose of cutting in line, yeah. Which was not my purpose. All right. Well, Doug, let's move back to our comfort zone. Actually, it seemed like that was our comfort zone, the queue. We had a lot of information on that. Doug, let's move back to aviation. I think you've done a better job over the last year of not giving me all the negative stories, but just in case it still isn't quite even, why don't you start out this week?
Sure. I will happily start out with the bad story this week. And what could be a sign of things to come in the broader industry, FedEx just announced that it plans to close some of its stores, as well as freeze hiring due to a large drop in demand. FedEx CEO Raj Subramaniam said, "Global volumes declined as macroeconomic trends significantly worsened later in the quarter, both internationally and in the U.S., unquote. The company said it plans to close 90 FedEx office locations and 5 corporate offices. It will defer new hires and ground several planes. Uh-oh, Drew and listeners, here we go again. Well, maybe not so fast. A recent poll of Fortune 500 CEOs showed that 81% of them are preparing for a recession, but most expect it to be, quote, brief and shallow, unquote. Delta CEO Ed Bastian, speaking at a conference in Detroit, said this week, "There's no recession going on in the air travel business. If anything, there's more demand than we can possibly handle. What you're seeing is a big shift coming out of COVID." He also said business travel is approximately 80% of pre-COVID levels at Delta. Separately, American CEO Robert Isom has the same optimism, saying, "While there may be some concern about leveling off of growth rates, the airlines have not participated for the last 3 years in any of that growth. We're just now getting back as an industry to within 10% of 2019. When you ask me, am I concerned? Absolutely not. I see demand for travel and an industry that has been more or less constrained." On the other side of the pond, Ryanair CEO Michael O'Leary, we love this guy. He said people will still fly during a recession and his airline will continue to grow in spite of a European energy crisis due to the war in Ukraine and sky-high inflation.
Yeah, you know, Michael O'Leary, he's better positioned than anyone for a recession, because what did we talk about? I think it was the last episode. What does well during a recession? Walmart.
Budget. Yeah, budget. Walmart. In fact, he compared Ryanair. I think a couple episodes ago, we said that Barry Biffle from Frontier compared Frontier to Walmart. Well, right. Michael O'Leary compared Ryanair to Lidl or Aldi, which are two discount chain grocers in Europe. Right. Well, and Aldi's in the U.S. too, but
not great news from FedEx. I was with Ryan for this trip, and he works for a cargo airline, and we were talking about why this dip, because it was doing so well. Mm-hmm. And listen to this. We came up with some possible reasons. I want to hear what you think about it. A number of things. People aren't working from home as much. So there's less people sitting at home that are procrastinating and going on Amazon to buy stuff they don't need. So you have those people. There's the recession fears. So people are starting to spend less because they're concerned about a recession. So they're saving. Inflation, stuff is more expensive. So people aren't spending their discretionary income as much because gas is expensive and other things that they must have are expensive. The biggest thing we think, and listen to this, pre-COVID, we did a show where we confirmed that passenger airlines carry almost 50% of the world's air cargo. Mm-hmm. Guess what's happening now? The passenger airlines are back in the U.S. 90% of 2019. Not the rest of the world, but passenger airlines are coming back and we're lifting these goods again. And that's competing with the cargo carriers. During COVID, 75% of that lift from the airlines was removed. Now in the U.S., it's almost back 100%. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's a lot that goes into it. Amazon to some extent, but FedEx hasn't delivered for Amazon for several years. I think that Amazon doing their own delivery now, using Atlas and DHL for the air freight and using their own handlers on the ground, I think is actually really starting to severely impact UPS and FedEx. But talking to some of my friends who are in the cargo world, they were saying that cargo was actually struggling pre-COVID. FedEx and UPS were, they had leveled off, not struggling like they're going to go out of business or anything, but they just weren't having a lot of growth. In fact, I think there was a little bit of decline as well. COVID comes along. As you said, everyone's on their couch ordering things, cargo, we have to get vaccines, we have to get all these masks, everything, like all the logistics. Cargo went crazy during COVID. Now that things are back to more normalized, plus, as you said, the inflation, plus the airlines, the passenger airlines flying again, I think that we're, I think that FedEx was heading in this direction pre-COVID, and COVID just delayed. We keep talking about normalizing things. I think that this is a sign of normalization. I don't think that this is necessarily an indicator of a broader issue in the aviation industry.
Well, yeah, I mean, in this, we're talking about FedEx, but you know, you've also heard that Amazon is closing some warehouses, so they're right-sizing as well. Mm-hmm. Amazon is really scary for the bigger cargo carriers because they don't have their own airline per se. It's almost like they take the lowest bidder, and some of them are painted as Primeir, but it's not Amazon.
No, it's Atlas and Mesa. It's, you know, Atlas, DHL, and Sun Country.
Yeah. So the airlines, you know, we use vendors to cut the cost. So the people who do the ramp, sometimes the people who do the catering. Amazon is vendoring out airline jobs. Yeah. So to the lowest bidder. Knowing Jeff Bezos, it's going to be the lowest bidder. Mm-hmm. Tough competition. We're going to jump down under for our next story. This headline seemingly came out of nowhere, then was squashed just as fast as it appeared. So reports circulated last week that struggling airline Virgin Australia was in buyout talks with Air New Zealand. Local reports said the two airlines were engaged in merger talks and that separately, Virgin Australia was also assessing a potential purchase of regional carrier Rex. All parties initially declined to comment when approached by Australian media. Less than a day after the report surfaced, Air New Zealand released a statement saying, Air New Zealand confirms that it has not been approached and is not in discussion with any parties regarding a potential merger transaction. Which means they probably were, because they were so forceful in that.
No, I read a little bit about this, and apparently some of their version of the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, if you are engaging in this sort of discussion, you have to file that and let them know that this is going on. And they said that they talked to I believe they said the New Zealand Exchange, and they said we were not in discussions at all. Like, this was just rumor, which to me, it's crazy because it blew up. Like, it literally blew up and it was all over. And then just as fast as it started, it all went away.
Yeah, I don't know enough about the airline industry in those two countries to know if there are too many carriers or too few. It doesn't seem like there's a lot. There's Rex, there's Jetstar, there's Qantas and Air New Zealand. I don't know of a lot more.
Yeah, but I think we've talked about this. Jetstar is either fully or partially owned by Qantas, I believe. Okay. Yeah, they're not all independent. I also don't know what the ownership laws are between those two countries. I don't know if a New Zealand company can fully own an Australian company. I know in the U.S. there's limits, and other lot of other countries, like, there are limits to ownership. I don't know between those two. Could it even be a possibility? Didn't realize this, but I was also reading Air New Zealand from 2011 to 2016 had like a 20%, 20 something percent ownership in Virgin, and then they sold.
Mm, interesting. Okay. Yeah, so there has been a partnership.
There's some history.
Virgin Australia doesn't have any real international traffic to speak of. So if they merge with Air New Zealand, they could get that back somehow.
Yeah. Because they got rid of their triples during COVID.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to think Air New Zealand would be the surviving.
Oh, absolutely! Yeah, absolutely. You would think that.
It seems like it's
a non-starter, I guess. Like that, it's not happening. Yeah,
yeah, it has a strong man, but it seems like those two countries play nice because I know that Qantas flies from the U.S. to New Zealand, and Air New Zealand flies from Australia to L.A. I believe
Qantas, I think, is launching Melbourne to Dallas coming, or Yeah, Melbourne, Dallas, but I think they also do Auckland to
LA, right?
LA. Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, they coordinate, but we'll see how it plays out. I mean, we have a lot of listeners in that area, so any comments for us regarding this, let us know, and we'll talk more about it on the next episode. We'll do a little bit more research.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's time for a go-round on a topic we covered earlier this year, the pilot shortage and one airline's proposal to fix the problem. U.S. regional airline Republic, as a reminder, proposed to the FAA to allow co-pilots to join the airline with just 750 hours. That's half of the current 1,500-hour requirement, which was put into place in 2011 following a 2009 Colgan Air Q400 crash in Buffalo. Previously to the new law, co-pilots could fly at regional airlines with just 250 hours. Drew, I know we talked about this at the time. Several trade groups, including the Airline Pilots Association, ALPA, and the Allied Pilots Association, APA, opposed the proposal, presenting data that shows fatal commercial accidents in the United States dropped to zero after the law was enacted. A spokesman for ALPA said, quote, "Proponents of relaxing the rule characterize it as a way to increase the supply of available pilots, just as it would be a bad idea to dilute doctors' qualification requirements in an effort to increase the supply of practicing physicians. It's equally ill-advised in a safety-sensitive occupation like our own," unquote. The FAA ruled against Republic's proposal on Monday, saying the 1,500-hour rule, as it's called, will remain in place. In a statement, the agency said, "The FAA considers it to be of greater public interest to ensure and maintain the level of safety provided by the foundation of an integrated aviation education required by current criteria." I have my thoughts. What are yours? Let's go. Let's have you go first.
Well, as someone who is half interested in possibly being an airline pilot, I don't like it because it's 1,500 hours. But I'm kind of staying out of this because if ALPA and the FAA are saying it's good and it's worked, I'll go with that. I mean, what are your thoughts on this?
I think when we talked about it, you mentioned, well, you felt safe flying on regional carriers prior to the 1,500-hour rule. Why can't we go back to that? I think was kind of how the discussion went. And initially I said, well,
yeah. Because it was 250 hours. Back then it was 250 hours to join a major as a first officer.
Yeah. Initially, I was saying I could see the 1,500-hour rule getting repealed, and I wouldn't be upset about it. But the more I look at the data and read some of the things that are put out by the trade groups, by the FAA, by a lot of other people, and just talking to other pilots who started flying regionally, most people agree that because the safety has gotten to where it is, 1,500 hours may definitely has a little part to do with that. There's a lot more to how safe airlines have become. Why would we change something to jeopardize how safe we've gotten? It is kind of the point that people are making. And I tend to agree with that we need to find other ways to get more pilots as opposed to lowering the entry requirements.
Republic is the airline that posed this to go to 750 hours. That's still, you know, way more. That's was three times as much. I don't know. I can't do quick math, but way more than double the 250. But still, these groups are saying, no, keep it at 1,500. But as I said, you have more experience. And if you feel like this is good, I'm good with it. And it's going to make it more difficult to hire pilots. It's going to make it more difficult for the airlines. But we always find a way around it. And I have one answer for people who want to be pilots and don't have 1,500 hours. Mukulele.
Yes. You were talking about C-208s. They fly all over the islands. In fact, Drew, someone in my INDOC class at our airline, my first 2 weeks, she started out flying in Hawaii, flying the C-208s all around the islands.
How awesome is that, right? Yeah, I mean, while you wait, you could be a regional pilot in Hawaii. You know, things could be worse. We talked about the 208 that Ryan was showing me on the ramp, the little cargo plane, Cessna 208 Caravan. I didn't know it was called Caravan, but
yeah.
So when we're in Hawaii, when we're waiting for our flight back home, we're seeing these Cessnas land. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's a 208. I didn't know it carried passengers.
Yeah. Yeah. It goes to Lanai and Molokai.
My chat and cut, my very polite chat and cut going home. The reason I chat and cut is because Ryan and Tanner, I was expecting them to be last on the standby list on our carrier. So I'm at the top because I have 23 years. So they were at the bottom, but the flight was wide open. I wasn't concerned that we weren't all getting on. There's someone below them. You know, I see this person being cleared and I'm like, I have got to ask who this is that would be lower in priority
than someone who doesn't even work for that airline.
Right. They work for cargo airlines. So I went up to him and said, like, do you mind if I ask, are you a travel agent? And he's like, no, I work for an airline. I'm like, what airline? It's like, oh, Mukulele. So he works for Mukulele. So I talked to him and he joined recently. He's from the Midwest. He has 350 hours. He's living the dream in Hawaii. And this little airline, Mukulele, this is a Part 135 carrier, which we've talked about on the show, which is 30 seats or less. And you only need 250 hours to start with one of these carriers. So he's working for them. Mukulele did some research. They are actually owned by Southern Airways Express. Mukulele also has Embraer 175s. So this guy can gain his hours, really? Stay with the same airline. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's a regional airline. For those of you listening, with only like 250 hours, you can go work at JSX, which Doug and I have talked about. That's a little regional on the West Coast. You could be a corporate pilot. But the other thing I'm thinking about, Doug, CFIs. CFIs will start to be very rare because they're going to be plucked away.
They're going to be plucked to backfill the regionals who are backfilling into the majors.
You know, the little place where I go to, Brett Aviation, you know, I asked him, so are you guys always looking for CFIs? Like, yeah, that is definitely a place people could easily find a job these days. It's a job that's in high demand. Not a lot of pay, but it's fun. Doug, our final story this week is in regards to something we have long joked about. Maybe the folks at IATA actually listen to us. We always joke that Newark Airport is actually in Elizabeth, New Jersey, and not Newark, and definitely not in New York City, even though it is closer to Manhattan than JFK, which is technically inside the New York City limits. According to an article in Travel and Leisure, citing Lufthansa, who was quoting IATA...
I'm trying to follow this.
Newark will no longer be considered a New York City hub beginning October 3rd. What does this mean exactly? IATA defines some cities as multi-airport cities, where there are multiple airports under one IATA city code. An example is WAS. You type in SFO to WAS, you're going to see flights to Baltimore, to DCA, Washington National, or my airport, IAD. This allows travelers to seamlessly book flights into and out of different airports without paying extra for the ticket. New IATA standards go into effect on October 3rd, which will remove Newark from the NYC cities code. So when you go in availability or you go in, I would assume, Kayak or Google Flights, and you do SFO to NYC, Newark will not appear. Is that your understanding?
No, it will still appear in the search. If you do NYC, it'll still appear in the search. Okay. What this is doing is it's removing it from if there are ear ops, if there's something that happens. Let's say I'm flying to JFK and my flight cancels. The airline offers me additional flights for no additional cost.
Yeah.
I can right now, if I'm going to JFK and mm-hmm. that flight cancels, I can go to Newark without paying extra. I can go to LaGuardia without paying extra. But if I want to change my ticket to Buffalo, yeah. let's say that I have a connection, I'm like, no, I just want to fly nonstop to Buffalo.
Right.
I can't, because that's not within that region, that city. I would pay extra. Like they could possibly let me do it, but I would pay extra. You can still, my understanding is you can still search for Newark using NYC. But if your flight to JFK cancels and you say, well, I want to go to Newark instead, it's not going to be a free change. It'll be, if it costs more, you'll have to pay more.
It might be
that's where it's going to get people.
Right. And it might be a ticket reissue where you have to Correct. Buy basically a new ticket, pay the difference in fare and pay the penalty.
Yeah.
So it's not
absolutely
good yeah. for Newark. I mean, from the looks of it. According to the article, some airlines were aware of the new change, but when the author reached out to the Port Authority, the Port Authority controls these airports. It's the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Newark, LaGuardia, and JFK. They actually manage all three. That combined entity that runs all of New York's airports, including Newark, the representative said they had not heard about the change, which is weird.
Yeah, I don't understand this. Newark, while it's not in New York City, as we said, it's closer to Manhattan than JFK is. It's owned and operated and run by the city of New York, by the Port Authority.
Same organization.
Why is IATA now going in and messing with this and changing it?
Well,
just because it's across the state line. But what is a state yeah. line? It's a fake thing that we made up 250, 300 years ago.
Yeah. And if you look at the Washington area, the city code WAS includes, again, Baltimore, DCA, and IAD. These are basically in three different states, Virginia, Maryland, and the district, which is not a state, but it's a different.
It's a district.
And you have DCA, which has its own borders, and it's the district. Baltimore is much farther from downtown DC than Newark is from downtown Manhattan. So to me, this does not make any sense. I don't understand why they're doing it just for Newark. I mean, we'll see how that plays out for the major carrier that's in Newark. And I'm wondering if the other carriers on the other side are happy about this, because now Newark is not officially part of NYC per IATA.
I don't get it. The only thing that really matters is,
yeah, you're saying about the ticket prices. To be honest, I think most airlines would just let their people change because they want their passengers to be able to fly from all three airports easily.
We'll see how it goes.
We've covered Qantas Project Sunrise quite a bit on this show. I think it was even in our first episode.
I think it was.
This is Qantas' goal of flying nonstop from Sydney to New York and London. It's been a headline grabber off and on for the last several years as it flew test flights in 2019, debated between using the 787 or the A350, and when the airline finally chose the A350 earlier this year. Air New Zealand has been less outspoken about their plans and quietly launched an ultra-long flight of their own this week, Doug.
New Zealand 2, a nonstop flight from Auckland to New York JFK, and New Zealand 1, the return flight, began this week. The flights take approximately 16 and 17 and a half hours, respectively, vaulting them into the coveted list of some of the world's longest flights. Air New Zealand CEO Greg Foran said, "As one of the world's greatest cities, Air New Zealand is proud to add the Big Apple to its list of 29 international destinations. Traditionally, flight numbers 1 and 2 are used for an airline's flagship route, and that's what New York will be, our flagship route," unquote. Hmm. The flight didn't go off without a hitch, though, Drew, as upwards of 40 bags had to be sent on separate flights due to weight restrictions on the flight.
Doug, this is not good. The 787-9... it just does not have the capability of the A350. They're leaving 40 bags behind. That means absolutely no cargo was on. That's the icing on the cake, carrying some cargo. And I can tell you this, and I'm sure Air New Zealand is very similar to us. When it gets down to it and you have a weight restriction, the first thing that comes off is the cargo. Guarantee you this flight left with no cargo and 40 less bags for the people on board. This is a public service announcement to Boeing, and I know people are going to get tired of me talking about this. Please hurry up and continue with your plans, or you mentioned a 787-10 HGW, high gross version, have one that exceeds what the A350-1000 can do in range with a full load of bags and cargo. They have to do it because we're seeing the limits.
Well, Scott Kirby at United said that his airline would immediately buy several more 78-10s if Boeing were to release the high gross weight version.
Yeah, what are we waiting for? And we don't have any inside information on this. We're just speculating like everyone else. But I would assume several airlines would be willing to buy that. The 787 is a great product. Mm-hmm. It's very modern. This is why the 777 sales are stalled, because it may have a new cockpit.
It's tapped out.
787 is a great airplane, and the Dash 10 is the same size basically as a 777-200. So airlines could replace their 777-200s one for one with a 787-10, but it has to be a performer. I don't think it would be rocket science to put in an extra fuel tank in there. I would love to see a center landing gear like on the DC-1040. Doug, we've talked about the world's longest flights in the past, but now that Auckland and New York are connected, let's revisit this just for fun. Doug?
Number 10 is Houston to Sydney, which launches next month on United. 8,596 miles, coming in at 17 hours, 35 minutes. Number 9 is Darwin to London on Qantas, which I didn't realize they flew that. It's 8,620 miles, 17 hours and 55 minutes. Number 8 is Bangalore to San Francisco on Air India, 8,700 miles at 17 hours and 40 minutes. Number 7, Singapore to LA on Singapore Airlines, 8,770 miles, 17 hours and 50 minutes. And number 6 is Dubai to Auckland on Emirates, 8,824 miles, coming in at 17 hours and 10 minutes.
Continuing on, Auckland to New York on brand new Air New Zealand Flight 1, 8,828 miles, 17 hours and 50 minutes. Melbourne to Dallas on Qantas, 8,992 miles, 17 hours, 35 minutes. Perth to London on Qantas, just over 9,000 miles, 17 hours, 15 minutes. Singapore to New York on Singapore Airlines at 9,523 miles, 18 hours and 45 minutes. I didn't even know that they were relaunching this. Did you know
that?
Yeah,
it's back. Mm-hmm.
Wow, to both New York airports.
Yeah, both. But it's not to both New York airports.
Oh, okay. So
it's
now they have
Newark.
Newark, which is like so
starting
far
on the
away.
Third.
so far away from Manhattan. And then to actual New York, Singapore to New York JFK on Singapore, 9,537 miles. 18 hours and 50 minutes. Which one do you want to go on? I know we want to go on all of them, but if you had to pick one.
If I had to pick one,
It's tough.
It's hard.
Yeah, there's some good ones.
Looking at the list. They're all great. Perth to London, possibly, because of the history of Australia and the UK, mm-hmm. and just connecting nonstop, connecting those two countries.
Yeah,
I think that would probably be my top one, other than flying Singapore to JFK just to be on the longest flight.
Yeah, I think mine would be Singapore to JFK. And from what we learned from Ian, it is traveling from the home base with the home crew. So you're going to get the best service, catering, all that. I would do flight one. Let's just do all 10. Let's just plot it and just do one every couple months, and then we'll be good. We'll be equal.
Yeah, I can't even fly an hour down the road to LA on a weekend. But yeah, I would love to do all 10. All right. Well, we love getting listener feedback and mentioning what you, the listeners, have to say. Drew, I think you met a new listener at LAX last weekend.
No, I actually met him on the flight from Maui to Denver.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and this is what's great about people who love aviation. They just hear people talking about aviation, and they're drawn to it. Ryan and I board. We're close to the back. We got 3 seats to ourselves, which is awesome, and we're happy, and we're talking about aviation, and people hear us. And there's this other guy behind us who's listening intently, and he's like, "Do you work for blank our airline?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I do." And he's like, "Oh, what do you do?" And I said, "Oh, I'm an ops manager." And he told me about a really good friend he has who works for our airline, and we got to meet him. He seems just like us. Like, he's really into everything about the experience and customer service. Talking to him for about half an hour on the flight, like between rows, and he lives in the Washington area. So we'll probably hang out. It's going to be great information that I get from him on the podcast and how we can appeal more to not just aviation people. But anyway, Trevor, I told him about the podcast. He already scrolled through the episodes. And he said that he really appreciates that there are industry people with real knowledge creating content in this space. How awesome is that?
That's great. Trevor, when Drew sent me the screenshot of what you said, I was blown away. I thought that's awesome, because we threw darts at the wall when we were trying to figure out what this podcast was going to be about. We said, let's just talk about everything. Let's talk about the flying. Let's talk about our work. Let's talk about the business side. And that way we can just bring everyone in. And I do know some of our listeners get tired hearing about business. Other listeners get tired hearing about your flights to Maui and back. But we're doing this because we enjoy just talking about everything aviation. And it pulls all these different aspects into the whole. And you get the whole piece of the pie. Or you get the whole pie, not all the pieces.
Well, you talk about the pie. You know how you can't decide what kind of pizza to get? So you get a half and half.
Yeah.
So with us, you get a pie with like 10 different flavors. And if you didn't like it, it's just one slice. We're going to move on to something else that you might like better.
That's true.
You know, if you're tired of me talking about bag cans in Fargo, North Dakota, just wait. You know, we'll be on to another topic. Or you get tired of Doug talking about stall speeds flying into Maui during crosswinds, which is actually really exciting to me. I'd like to talk more about that. As I'm saying it, I'm like, wow, we should talk more. And Doug, we haven't really talked about this, and you can edit this out of the episode, but AvGeeks cause a lot of problems when they have time off. You said it's like, oh my goodness, I'm gone for a few hours and you're blowing up Instagram. Go on Instagram. There's a lot of pictures from my trip to Los Angeles and to Hawaii. And then during Doug's time off, I think you're working on something, a project for us, which is really cool.
Yeah, we've got a project that we're really excited about. We'll keep it on the DL for right now. We'll probably announce it here in the next couple of weeks once it gets up and running. But it's something we're really excited about.
We're excited about it. And it is something that everyone, I think we can open it up so everyone can contribute, right? I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll figure out how to do this.
Yeah.
Well, to our listeners, this podcast is your show. So go on our website, nexttripnetwork.com. Let us know what's on your mind so we can talk about it, or give us your feedback. You can also follow us on Twitter or Instagram at Next Trip Podcast. Please tell your friends about us so we can reach more people who love aviation and travel.
Thanks to all of our listeners, especially our new ones, for your support and for joining the conversation. We'll see you next week. And in the meantime, stay aviation tough.
This has been the Next Trip Podcast. Visit nexttripnetwork.com for information about previous episodes, trip reviews, aviation photos, and other aviation-related content. This is your show, so search for The Next Trip on Twitter and let Doug and Drew know what you want to talk about. Not on Twitter? You can also email them at nexttrip.podcast@gmail.com. Please consider leaving a review wherever you download your podcasts. It will help other listeners like you discover this show.
I bet I can find something tangential.
Tangential. Yeah. of tangent.
Both of us throw these words in knowing that it's going to be a tongue twister. All right.
Someone on social media poignantly said,